After taking the reins of state, Pachacuti spent the next 25 years expanding the empire from central highland Peru to Lake Titicaca and beyond. His methods were subtler and more economical, with direct force, than one might expect, as exemplified by the slow takeover of the coastal valley of Chincha. In about 1450, Pachacuti dispatched an army to Chincha under Capac Yupanqui, meaning roughly munificent honored one, a kind of adopted brother. Marching into the valley with thousands of troops, Capac Yupanqui informed the fearful local gentry that he wanted nothing from Chincha whatsoever. He said that he was the son of the sun, according to the report of two Spanish priests who investigated the valley's history in the 1550s, and that he had come for their good and for everyone's, and that he did not want their silver, nor their gold, nor their daughters. Far from taking the land by force, in fact, the Inca general would give them all that he was carrying, and he practically buried the Chincha leadership under piles of valuables. In return for his generosity, the general asked only for a little appreciation, preferably in the form of a large house, from which the Inca could operate, and a staff of servants to cook, clean, and make the things needed by the outpost. And when Capac Yupanqui left, he asked Chincha to keep expressing its gratitude by sending craftspeople and goods to Hosco. A decade later, Pachacuti sent out another army to the valley, this one led by his son and heir, Tupa Inca Yupanqui, Royal Honored Inca. Tupa Inca closeted himself with the local leadership and laid out many inspired ideas for the valley's betterment, all of which were gratefully endorsed. Following the Inca template, the local leaders drafted the entire populace into service, dividing households by sex and age into cohorts, each with its own leader who reported to the leader of the next larger group. Everything was in order for the people to know who was in control, the Spanish priests wrote. Tupa Inca delegated tasks to the mobilized population, hewing roads to link Chincha to other areas controlled by the Inca, building a new palace for the Inca, and tending the fields set aside for the Inca. Tupa Inca apparently left the area in charge of his brother, who continued managing its gratitude. The next visit came from Pachacuti's grandson, probably in the 1490s. With him came escalating demands for land and service. The veneer of reciprocity was fading. By that point, the Chincha had little alternative but to submit. They were surrounded by Inca satrapies. Their economy was enmeshed with the imperial machinery. They had hundreds or thousands of people doing the empire's bidding. The Chincha elite, afraid to take on the Inca army, always chose compliance over valor and were rewarded with plum positions in the colonial government. In 1976, Edward N. Luttwak, now at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C., published a short, provocative book about Imperial Rome that distinguished between territorial and hegemonic empires. Territorial empires directly occupy territories with their armies, throw out the old rulers, and annex the land. In hegemonic empires, the internal affairs of conquered areas remain in the hands of their original rulers, who become vassals. Territorial empires are tightly controlled, but costly to maintain. Hegemonic empires are inexpensive to maintain because the original local rulers incur the costs of administration, but the loose tie between master and vassal encourages rebellion. Every conquest-minded state is a mixture of both, but all Native American empires lean toward the hegemonic. Without horses, Indian soldiers perforce traveled slower than European or Asian soldiers. If brigades were tied up as occupiers, they could not be reassigned quickly. As a result, the Inca were almost forced to co-opt local rulers instead of displacing them. They did so with a vengeance.